I hereby call to order the public hearing for the Committee on Planning, Zoning, and Housing. The time is 7:05. Mr. Clerk, will you please read the roll?
Alderman Polkowski.
Here.
Alderman Sanders.
Present.
Alderman Carlozzi.
Here.
Alderman Giantonio. Alderman Naples.
Here.
Alderman Salerno.
Here.
Alderman Sanchez. We have five here. We have a quorum. Also seated, we have Alderman Pabon, Alderman Smedley, and Alderwoman Black.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Mr. Clerk, will you please read for record the public the notice for the public hearing?
A special meeting and public hearing will be held on Tuesday, October 11, 2016, for the New Britain Common Council Committee on Planning, Zoning, and Housing at 7 p.m. in Council Chambers, City Hall, 27 West Main Street, New Britain, Connecticut, for the following. Resolution number 33560-1, conveyance of property known as 125 Columbus Boulevard to Zenilith Partners, LLC, for not less than $150,000. At this hearing, interested persons may be heard and written communications may be received. Copies of said items are available for public inspection during the normal business hours in the office of the Town and City Clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Clerk. Having been properly noticed of the public hearing, we will discuss our first item on the agenda. That's resolution number one. Resolution 33560-1, conveyance of property known as 125 Columbus Boulevard to Zenilith Partners, LLC, for not less than $150,000. Do we have anyone here to speak in favor of this project?
Mr. Chairman, did you want the presentation now or after the public hearing?
Let's do it after. Let's do it after. That's fine.
Then we'll wait.
Perfect. Do we have anyone here to speak in favor of this item? Do we have anyone here to speak in favor of this item? Do we have anyone to speak against this item? Do we have anyone to speak against this item? And for the third and final time, do we have anyone to speak against this item? Seeing no one, we will close public participation. Time is 7:07. I hereby call to order the special meeting of the Committee of Planning, Zoning, and Housing. No one has left the room, therefore we still have a quorum. Mr. Malinowski.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Chairman and Alderman. This evening we have Roberto Arista and Terry Belkis from both Dakota Partners and Zenilith Partners. They are here to present their presentation for the 125 Columbus Boulevard site, which is on your agenda this evening. So without any further ado, Roberto.
Good evening. My name is Roberto Arista, Dakota Partners, principal at Dakota Partners. Thank you for having us tonight for this presentation. As Ken has said, the presentation is about the proposal on the 125 Columbus Boulevard site. And I'm going to try the technology now to see if it works. There we go. So as you know, the site is what could be referred to as the old police department site, bound by Columbus Boulevard and Herald Square. And I don't know if all of you can see the presentation. Anyway, the proposed project consists of 160 residential units in two buildings, plus about 21,500 square feet of commercial space. And we would be looking to develop this in two phases, building A on the left and then building B on the right. As you can see from this site plan, let's see if I can point, the buildings are this one and that one. They form a U-shaped with a courtyard in the middle. residential entrances would be in the courtyard there and there, and then the commercial instead would sort of surround the buildings on these two sides right here. And a lot of the commercial will be fronting Columbus Ave. The buildings will be six stories. The first floor, of course, is commercial and community space for the residents. And then the five stories above are going to be residential. The mix of the units will be 61 bedrooms and 102 bedrooms, roughly 750 square feet for the one bedrooms, 1,080 square feet for the two bedrooms. And there will be an equal number of units in each of the buildings, so 80 in Building A and 80 in Building B. Whoops, went too fast. So this is a perspective from Herald Square, and this is what shows the courtyard area of the buildings. The architecture of the buildings is modern. You can see the two brick colors that kind of give, the darker color gives the grounding to the buildings, and then there's these elements on the corners that are sort of tower-like with a parapet on top. And of course on the ground floor you can see that there's storefronts. So on the courtyard side, it has a more residential feel. Now when you switch to the Columbus Boulevard perspective, you'll see the storefronts, which are more prominent, which will encourage a lot of pedestrian access and circulation. This is a footprint of the first level of the building. You can see that, oops, sorry about that. This area here is the commercial area, wide open at the moment because we don't really know who the tenants are going to be. And then this other area here instead is the community space for the tenants. And that includes bike racks, a management office, exercise, and then a community space right over here. The second building, Building B, will pretty much mirror this. The upper floors, typical upper floor, will have 16 units. Six of those will be the one bedrooms, and 10 of those will be the two bedroom units. Oops. Let's see if I skipped anything. Okay. The typical apartment finishes will be modern to attract a younger crowd, downtown urban crowd. These are buildings that we have built. These are model units of buildings that we have done in various areas. In terms of a timeline, for Building A, as I said in the beginning, we're going to build this in two phases. Building A first. We would look to start construction in the fall of 2017, which is about a year from today. Construction completion would be in the winter of 2018, and then we would finalize lease up in the fall of 2019. Building B, we would hope to start right after the completion of Building A, depending on how well the lease up of Building A is going. So if we can show the banks and the funders that Building A is going well, I'm sure we will get Building B funded right away. In terms of funding, our estimate of this project is about $27.6 million, not the project, but the building, the first phase, $27.6 million. The second building should be approximately the same. And the funding sources include federal tax credits, DOH, Department of Housing Flex Funds, DECD, Urban Action Grants, and then our banking relationship, Bank of America, would provide a construction loan and a permanent loan after that. So we believe that this project hits on a number of community benefits, including your TO district goals, which of course is all about encouraging people to use their car less and using public transportation, reusing an urban site or an unused site. We believe that this building or this project is really designed at a human scale. It's not too large. It's about six stories tall, which is pretty much in keeping with many of the other buildings here in the city. It provides choices of lifestyle. In other words, many people do want to live today in the urban environment, especially the young people. It preserves an urban center, your urban center, and it creates a nice neighborhood identity with a courtyard. And lastly, you know, design really matters. We think that the attractiveness of this building or this project will add a lot to the community. About our team, Dakota Partners, which I'm, as I said before, I'm a principal with Dakota Partners. We're a builder and developer, and we're based in Massachusetts. Xenolith Partners, who is our development partner in this, then Paul Bailey Architect, a New Haven-based architect, BSC Group, the civil engineer. They're based in Glastonbury. And lastly, Hall Keen, our property manager. Hall Keen is a Massachusetts-based property manager. They manage roughly 10,000 residential units across the Atlantic seaboard, and they manage all of our projects. Okay, here we go. A little bit more about Dakota. Again, as I said, we're based in Waltham, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. We were founded in 2006. Our focus is really primarily residential development, but of course, in some of we don't specifically look for commercial, but we do have commercial property, which is typically part of projects like this. And we use many forms of financing with you know, the state or the federal incentive programs. We have a footprint in three states. Our projects are in Massachusetts, Connecticut, and New Hampshire. And what we typically build is garden style apartment building, and we do a lot of historic conversions of mills. Our portfolio at the moment includes a little over 1,000 units. I just want to give you a sampling of some of the projects we've done. I'm putting in this sampling some of the projects that we've done in Connecticut. This one is 179 Allen Street in downtown Hartford. It's right near the train station. It's a building with 63 converted building, 63 residential units, 11,000 square feet of commercial space on the ground floor, primarily aimed at attracting, you know, the young urban crowd, young professionals. And this was a historic renovation, and we were granted a preservation award for it. This is another project that we're just completing here in Hartford. It's 112 residential units. This is a building that was known as the Hartford Office Supply, but was actually started as a Pratt & Whitney machine shop way back in the 1800s. It's near the Capitol building. And it's right across from a neighborhood called Frog Hollow. And we believe that this is really going to be sort of a changer for that neighborhood. And we're going to start leasing this building up in January. This is garden style development, 72 residential units in Brookfield, Connecticut. This is more of a suburban kind of a project. It's near the town center in Brookfield. And it's part of the Four Corners Revitalization Zone. This is a project in Hyannis, Massachusetts, of 120 units. We just started the second phase of this project, which is the 60 units. This is entirely workforce housing, which is in great need at the Cape, because they have a lot of service workers, and they don't have places to live. So I'm going to turn it over to Terry, who is principal of Xenolith, to talk about Xenolith.
Thank you. Thanks, Roberto. Good evening. I'm here on behalf of Xenolith Partners. My partner is Andrea Kretschmer, and she wanted me to note that she really wanted to be here tonight, but she's with her family celebrating the religious holiday. We formed the entity this year, but we have 20 years of development experience in New York and Connecticut. We do a variety of projects that are typically mixed income, mixed use in urban centers and also suburban developments. We have worked on everything from low to mid-rise to high-rise construction, as well as adaptive reuse of historic structures. Our portfolio includes more than 500 units, and we have several hundred in pre-development right now. The first project is Coney Island Commons. This was completed in 2013. This has 196 residential units. It's all workforce housing and also has a significant community component. It has a 40,000 square foot YMCA. It's a big, beautiful community center. It's received a number of awards, including from the Community Builders Award and the New York State Affordable Housing Coalition. We also have Clinton Commons. This is a smaller development. This is townhouse-style workforce housing right outside of the downtown of Bridgeport. This had a TDC of about $10 million. It consisted of a number of vacant and blighted lots that were raised to develop the new housing. And this was placed in service also in 2013. Then we have the William Clark Threadmill in Stonington, Connecticut. This is more of a suburban development on the Pawcatuck River in Stonington. This required a significant amount of brownfield remediation due to some of the marine uses on the site, many more underground storage tanks than anyone really foresaw there being. We were able to utilize DECD brownfield money to assist with that. And to finance this, we also use federal and state historic tax credits in addition to funding from DOH. This is a mixed income project. It's 80% market rate and 20% workforce housing with a total of 58 units. They're very, very large units. They average about 1,200 square feet. Beautiful windows, you know, they're about 10 feet tall, loft living spaces, and a small amount of commercial, about 9,000 square feet. And this is, actually, construction is completing within the next couple of days. They're about to file for the CO on this, and they're already starting to see a lot of demand for these units and have been taking applications over the past month and a half or so. And then lastly, we have Stanley Commons. This is in Brooklyn, New York. This is currently under construction. I think it's about 70% complete. And this has 240 units in low to mid-rise buildings. This was a New York City RFP site. So we went through an application process and were granted the site. It takes up an entire city block. It's enormous. It's about 250,000 square feet. And it will also include a 19,000 square foot community facility. And this is due to be complete in mid-2017 and should be fully leased in early 2018. So that wraps up our summary of Xenolith Partners. But we're happy to take any questions you might have about our proposed development.
Thank you. Before we get into any questions, do I have a motion on the floor before we get into the discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to place this resolution on the floor for discussion.
Second.
Now, is that favorable recommendation, neutral recommendation?
I guess we're looking at a favorable recommendation at this point. We can alter that if we have any issues, but I think we're looking at a favorable, yes.
Okay, first by Alderman Solano, seconded by Alderman Naples. Having said that, we could get into any discussion. We obviously have the partners here in from Xenolith and Dakota. If we have any questions on their presentation, feel free to ask Alderman Carlosi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry, I didn't get the young lady's name.
Terry.
Mr. Chairman, through you to Terry. If you can go back to your slides.
Sure.
I guess this is the first one. So you mentioned that basically Xenolith was started in 2016.
Yes.
Are you, and then you talk about these other buildings,
mm-hmm.
Is that because you all were associated with POCO and have now broken off from POCO?
So Andrea and I both work for POCO, and she also works with her own family company, Kretschmer Companies.
Right. So Xenolith is something that you formed? But
it's a new entity. It's just she and I.
Right. Okay. So these buildings that you're referring to were mm-hmm. POCO developments?
No, well, Stanley Commons,
yeah,
and Coney Island Commons are Kretschmer buildings.
Okay.
And the other two are POCO buildings.
Okay. And she's not here, obviously, because of the holiday.
Right.
So I appreciate the fact that she's with her family, which is where she should be. It's unfortunate that she's not here, however. okay. Just go back to your informational slide, if you could, for a second. Okay, and you showed us a number of the different projects that you're... So you're now and Dakota Properties.
Yes.
How did the two of you work together on this project?
So we are co-developing the project.
Okay.
Yes.
So the two of you together.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously have done enough of these projects that getting the funding to put these forth is not something of an issue?
No, not at all.
Okay. Why New Britain? What brings you here?
It was an appealing site. There are only so many urban areas that have opportunities such as this. And also a big issue in a lot of cities is a general desire to see something happen in the downtown. Not every city has that, and we just saw a lot of opportunity here, particularly with the fast track station, and TOD development is a really big priority on the part of the state, and increasingly other lenders are looking to finance those types of development. That's really the priority, I think, for everybody, is to fund these types of projects.
So I saw in the Dakota presentation, if we can go back to their slides, possibly Roberto, right?
Yes.
Okay. We can go back to your slides on your
which
layout.
Which one would you like to see?
The ground floor layout.
Okay.
Oops.
This is a bit temperamental here. It's not moving here. Hang on.
Okay, let's just leave on this slide since we're
sure.
Here. I don't know if we're going to get back here with the equipment that we have. So starting in fall of next year, obviously you're going to need time to apply for all your funding and then obviously doing all your engineering. When this says winter of 2018, I don't want to be foolish, but obviously we're not talking about winter as in February of 2018, but more
right.
Like November, December of 2018?
That's right.
Okay, because then you say lease-up would be in the fall of 2019.
Would complete in the fall of 2019.
Okay. And the difference between those two timelines, if you can explain it?
The difference between which time?
Yeah, the difference between winter 2018 and fall of 2019. I mean, even
So we're saying that it'll complete at the end of 2018?
Right.
And then by the fall of 2019, we will have leased it up.
Thank you. Okay.
Sorry that the terminology might be a little confusing.
I just wanted to know what was going on for those 8 or 9
months. We probably should have used months.
Okay. Then if we can go back to some of the other slides, if we can get there, that would be great. Okay.
So you wanted to see the first floor?
Yes. Right. And in one slide you mentioned how many thousands of square feet of commercial space?
So in each building there's roughly 10,700.
Okay. So the spacing, the walk-ins from Columbus Boulevard, obviously, I see, you know, on this side, I see, what, 1, 2, 3 doors or whatever.
Right.
And then there are doors also down that way.
On the other side, right.
But only a few.
Yeah.
And is there access to the commercial space from the courtyard as well?
From the other side? Yes,
yeah,
there
from
will
the courtyard
be.
Side.
There
okay.
will be, yes.
So what is your idea of how many potential tenants, if there's 10,000 square feet, do you see, I mean, obviously, I know this is hard, but
yeah,
okay,
it is hard.
Are you looking at? Do you think the market is going to call for 1,500 square feet per tenant? Do you think you're going to have a 2,000 square foot tenant space?
I think all of the above. I think you know the tenants might range from a daycare center, which might be 2,000 square feet, to maybe a real estate office, 1,000 square feet, 1,500 square feet. We really don't know until we start leasing it, and we haven't done that homework yet.
Okay. And can you explain how that might fit in with the, the use of the tenants that are living upstairs,
mm-hmm.
the residents, how they might be using that commercial space, or if there's any use, any appeal to them, and or the right track right across the street?
Well, there should be appeal to both. there should be appeal. Obviously, the pedestrian traffic is going to generate attraction to the commercial space. And there will be services that the tenants will use. So if there's a daycare center and there happens to be a family with a young child, they probably will use that daycare center.
Okay. Is there also, are you also providing, if there's a coffee shop or if there's a small sandwich shop, something like that, or maybe some other small retailer, where would parking be available to them?
So there is parking associated with the project. Mm-hmm. And most of it will be, in fact, for the commercial activities. For the residents, we'll probably, look at the garage down the road, which has 1,500 spots, and we'll probably negotiate a deal with the city in terms of leasing those spaces for the tenants.
Because that was my next question.
Yeah.
How are we going to meet the parking needs
for all those residents? But frankly, it's really to be seen, right? This is an urban building. And therefore, we're trying to encourage, less driving. And I understand people probably want to still own a car. But we may see a lot of people that just don't own a car, right?
Correct.
Because they take public transportation to Hartford, and they come home, and they'll use the restaurants and the activities in New Britain.
Right, but we also have zoning requirements in place. I'm trying to think
there is no requirement for parking in this zone.
And then that was my follow-up, because we also have zones where there's none, or there's like a half a spot per unit.
In this particular area, there's no requirement for parking.
It's within the parking district of the downtown.
Okay.
Which because of its proximity to parking garages, waives parking requirements.
Right. So we took care of that a little while ago. Okay.
And additionally, Alderman, the way we formulated our RFP when this went out, was looking for a developer who was willing to build a building that did not have parking. That was unconventional for New Britain, because we want to attract people who are going to use fast track and have one or no cars and possibly utilize our parking garage if they do have the one car. And that's why you see even here the bike stand within the building.
Yep.
How many bikes are you planning on holding?
Do we have a requirement on that?
I might be able to count them.
And we're looking at market rate?
So this is a mix. It's workforce housing and market rate.
Can you explain the difference? Because I saw workforce housing in some of your other properties.
Workforce housing is a restricted rent formula, so it's based on income. So you have to qualify for workforce housing. And the market rate is any rent that the market will bear.
So, okay, so let me go back to workforce housing, because I don't know if that's just a new nomenclature that we're going to use. Mm-hmm. Give me an example of what workforce housing means. Based on a formula,
in this case, workforce housing is a rent of 1,000, 900 to about 1,100, so 900 for a one-bedroom to 1,100 for a two-bedroom.
Okay.
And we're expecting the market rate to be between 1,000 for a one-bedroom to 1,200 for a two-bedroom.
Okay.
Not a huge difference.
All right. I understand that. I didn't know if it was just another way of expressing the term of, a certain percentage of income or whatever, and that's not what... Are we using that formula as well in here or no? A certain percentage of someone's income.
Well, it is based on a certain percentage of an average income. And that's what the rent translates into for this area.
So your thoughts are that in New Britain for this particular property, that a one bedroom would be roughly $1,900 a month.
So it's $1,000 a month. We're expecting $1,000 a month for a market. So in other words, free rent. You can rent it at any, and we're expecting it to be about $1,000 and $1,200 for a two-bedroom on average, because there's going to be differences in the building. And then on the workforce housing, which is based on income, you have to qualify for it. In this area, the rents are $900 for a one-bedroom, $1,100 for a two-bedroom.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I am.
Are you all set, Mr. Carlos?
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Alderman Smedley?
He'll be all set. I took care of your mother the other day. Question regarding the workforce equation. What is the threshold in that equation? So how much money do I have to make a year to qualify for workforce housing?
So it's roughly based on a third of your income, right? So a third of your income can be dedicated to rent, to housing. And that's how it's based. So you can do the math.
So is there a cap on that? My question is, what is the breaking point for I'm qualifying for workforce housing versus I'm going to pay market rate?
You have to make no more than a certain amount of income.
Do you know what that number is at this point?
I think it's about $48,000.
$48,000.
For workforce housing?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Alderman Salerno?
Yes, thank you. Through you, Mr. Chairman. I did the math on that, and that's 25%. But if we're looking at 48,000, and we're saying it's 1,000 per month, it's 12,000 a year. So it's, you're saying 48,000 would fit that category. Is that right?
It would be the median income, right, for the residents.
So it's less than 30%. I thought their percent was high, but... when it comes to the workforce housing issue, I guess my concern is that, for example, you had a place up in Hyannis. Mm-hmm. Now, I would assume that the Hyannis income levels are considerably higher.
No, they're very similar.
They are very similar.
The rents are just about the same as here. Yes.
Is that because we're in the Hartford, what formerly was known as the SMA? I'm asking dumb questions, but because
I don't know how large the SMA here is.
That answered part of my question on that. Curious on the Allen Street Hartford project that's there. What's the status of that in terms of capacity, or is it filled to capacity?
It's filled to capacity.
It is.
Yes.
Okay, and that was how long ago?
We filled it up, I think it was, last year, the year before last when we filled it up. So we've been there for a year and a half already.
Okay, so it's only been about a year and a half that you've gotten to capacity there.
No, it was filled up immediately.
Immediately.
We leased it up in 4 months.
I think I remember reading it. I asked that question because obviously Hartford has had historically problems at that point, and I guess that's turned around a little bit economically for them to have people, again, move into the urban areas. So I was wondering, if it's working in Hartford, how does that affect us, or would it affect us? And I don't think you can answer those questions yet, but I was just curious of where you were in terms of capacity there. The fact that
it tells me
that there might be a need for people to be here, and then the TOD comes into play more effectively that way. But okay. I was looking at the drawings and the design, and I found it interesting. We were having a little conversation earlier. It reminded, actually it was the clerk who mentioned that it kind of gave him some sense of the Blueback Square design in West Hartford, which is obviously more commercial there. And you can respond as developers. I don't know. I'm just, I'm on the other end of the trail here for looking at apartments. But one of the things that I've read and seen in terms of urban settings is an emphasis, or at least it was an emphasis on what we do with our upper area of our space. And that is, for example, you have a rooftop area that looks like it's pretty good size, 162. Are there any plans, or do you consider, or maybe what's your opinion on developing rooftop recreational space, garden space, things that would be even more attractive to particular professionals? I'm curious of does that fit in here? Can it fit in here? Is it completely out of the question?
Typically having something on the roof can be very attractive, but often, and I actually don't know precisely what the rule is here, but from a zoning perspective, it's just not allowed. So we haven't looked at that. The architect may have looked at that. I don't really know.
I'm not sure we have a zoning rule on that. not that I'm aware of, because that's considered innovative in some urban settings.
I mean,
if you go out to Seattle, if you go out to Denver, you'll see a lot of that. New York City does a tremendous amount of that, obviously higher-end apartments, but it would be something that would be interestingly attractive, I think, and I'm just curious if it... Because that doesn't stop us from changing zoning if it became attractive enough. I would think the council would consider that to be a possibility. But I'm just so you haven't given that part of it thought or at this stage.
I have not been involved at that level of the detail in the design process, but I'm pretty sure it was probably driven by the zoning. That's my guess.
Okay.
The other thing is that on the roof there's probably a bunch of rooftop equipment. And I'm not sure how that's configured and whether it would lend itself to having,
And I don't know either. I just, what that entails.
So we can look into
that. More cost of the building for the development. I would think that it would be, for many young professionals, something that would be attractive.
Sure.
If you're throwing in bikes and they're environmentally concerned about transportation, it would seem they would.
An infinity pool on the top.
I'm into vertical farming for myself, so I mean, I
hear you.
We're not going to do vertical farming in these particular areas, but I think that's the innovative thing that people say, oh, wow, I really would like to live there versus Allen Street, which is nice, but it's full of the capacity. All of a sudden, all I got to do is go 12 miles down the road, and I've got a garden spot or something of that nature. It's something I would like to have considered.
I can certainly look into that and give you an answer.
Great. I just, Great. Came to mind.
Mr. Majority Leader, the answer to your zoning question is we are silent on it. So consequently, I would think that the initial response from the zoning folks in City Hall is that it's not permitted because we are silent on it.
I would take the opposite view, but that's not...
I'm sorry, Mr. Malinowski. Silent from we just haven't addressed it.
We don't say it's permitted. We also do not say it's not permitted. So normally, when that is the case, we generally take the view is it's not permitted because we have no way of regulating.
Okay.
But Paul. If I can tell you that if the developer believes that that would add to. This development, you can rest assured that we will be before you to change the zoning ordinances so that they will no longer be silent on the matter.
And I would be a tremendous proponent of that option. Thank you.
Alderman Swadley?
Baby steps, gentlemen, baby steps. Let them build the building first.
Well,
more directly related to Alderman Salerno's question, can we put solar panels on the roof of it? And or would you consider a fuel cell somewhere on the property to cover the cost of your utilities? Because then you could heat the infinity pool you're going to put on the roof with the extra byproduct heat from the fuel cell. But serious question, will this qualify as a LEED building?
It has to be, I forget what it's called. It's not Energy Star, but it's something else that the state requires. So we have to at least design to that.
It's called being designed to passive house standard.
Okay. That's what
and
it is.
I think at a minimum, it meets LEED Silver requirements. Now, whether we go through with the certification for that is one thing, but the minimum requirement is to meet LEED Silver standards.
We're a green city, so it would be important to us.
But we are. The architect is currently working to build it to passive house standards, which is basically as green as you can get.
Perfect. Thank you. Alderman Sanders?
Myself, just a few comments, actually. I'm pretty excited to have you guys take this interest in New Britain. And again, I mentioned this a few times when these things pop up, that it shows it's a true testament to the leadership and the team that's been put in place. So it's really exciting. A couple comments I wanted to make. I think you're underestimating your potential a little bit. You build a nice brand-new building. I think instead of daycare, you might be looking at some restaurants, things like that, which is exciting, along with the busway and everything else. One thing I just want to make a comment for my colleagues, I think to Alderman Salerno, somebody who's a little hands-on with construction myself, when you start putting rooftop gardens on there, it's really, really expensive, so at the market rate, area, it might be a little difficult to do that, but it would be nice to see as well. I'm not sure how the fuel cell works yet, but Smedley is our he's our Energy Star guy here in New Britain. So
27 more days to be online.
But and then the other thing I think a lot of us have some adjusting to do is everything to do with this TOD and the areas that are going to start to develop along the busway. And I'm just saying this for, and I'll say it probably a few more times as we go through different developers. We're getting more dense in this construction, and it's going to be the parking is going to have to start being kind of let go as an issue, because these dense areas, you know, this is what the busway is meant to do. They're supposed to be developed to accommodate that. So just to keep that in mind, and again, I'll probably say that a few more times. I want to thank you guys for taking the interest. I'm in 150% support of this. If you could start tomorrow, I'd give you a hand myself, and hopefully that this will come to fruition and you'll take more interest, because we have two other areas that are looking to be developed along the fast track as well. So I wish you luck in this, and I hope that we can get this through for you with minimal obstacles. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Alderman Carlosi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I believe it was a month or two ago, we had someone in the who's pretty instrumental in the downtown area, who, not having seen any of the photos, not having heard any of the design, basically was just concerned that this building might not actually provide some. I don't want to misquote him, but he thought basically if there are all these services in the building, people won't really be going to downtown. Do we remember that speaker? And so, you know, you're located on Columbus Boulevard. Other services that are downtown. I see doors that open out to the street, as opposed to you have to walk in, you know, and then it's services are all sort of inside the building. I mean, I see doorways. So if someone was to accuse you of creating a building here, which is an island unto itself, how would you respond to that?
Well, I don't think that'll happen. I mean, I think that this is really pretty connected to the downtown, and I think that, you know, depending on what kinds of services we have in the building, we can't put them all possibly in the building, so people will meander and go elsewhere. And plus, how many different restaurants can you have, right? I mean, people aren't always going to eat Italian. They might want Thai one night, and so I don't see that as an issue at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, again, the gentleman made the comment at a meeting. Does it go back 2 or 3 months ago? You actually responded to the speaker. And so I think that's the message, you know, for our downtown merchants and our people that are invested in downtown, that there's going to be, what, 160 units of housing here? Those are all feet that are on the ground in the area living downtown. Mm-hmm. I mean, for over 20, 25 years, to anyone who would listen to me, I would always say, you can't have a vital downtown if you don't have people living downtown. I mean, we see that. Yeah, I mean, I worked in downtown Hartford in the Civic Center back in, hold on, I got to do the math, in the 80s. And, you know, it was true. When they built, I had to do the math. I had to figure it out. It's a long time ago.
I was born in 85.
But, you know, when they created Constitution Plaza, which you folks may or may not be aware of, they had all these stores, and there really was no tie-in to the rest of downtown. When they created the Civic Center, they had all these stores, and it was a destination. You know, you came to go to the Civic Center. You shopped in there. You may have gone to a game in there, to a hockey game when the Whalers were in Connecticut. But all these things were done, and it didn't really feed out to downtown. As retail started going up and down the streets, they didn't do well until people started living in the apartments. So, you know, you need, obviously, you, and I like the vision here of having a building with, and I like the idea that the doors aren't just in the front, but that they go all the way down the side on both sides. So you really have this dedication of almost the entire first floor on both buildings dedicated to commercial space. I think it's important, and along with Alderman Sanders, I would hope that what's going to come into that commercial space is more of a retail-oriented commercial space, because that would get people to come there, to come downtown, to then go to a show or do other things downtown and create other, you know, maybe someone's going to go to a Models and get toys and stuff like that. So, you know, my response to anyone who says, well, you know, this is all, it's not going to help us. Well, no, it is going to help you because you've got 160 units of housing in downtown. So I would hope that this would have in that commercial space things that are more like people in the entire New Britain are going to come to. And again, how many times can you eat Italian food every night?
Works
every night.
Alderman Salerno.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of comments though, and to Alderman Sanders. I just think because I don't want to really minimize the project. I think one of my concerns is sometimes I feel we don't think large enough about those things. Maybe it might be more expensive, I don't know, to consider those. But I think those become destination facilities. So people say, oh, I want to go there because they have a particular attraction. That's my interest. I think that if we have that, then we compete with other communities above and beyond the transportation piece. We say this is something that, I mean, I don't know if it affects funding. I don't know if it affects what the price of those apartments would be, for example. I mean, maybe the price goes up because you have a certain attraction over time, and that's when the baby step piece I get. But I don't really want to take that out of the equation for consideration. I think the more I think about it, the more interesting it becomes for me to say, wow, we've got this downtown. And the fact is that, and I think in support of everybody is saying, is that this is not the only development. If we're going to wait and we build 162, that's it, no more, well, we can might as well just go home now, because the idea is we should have another set of buildings like that in downtown, so that we can spread out, if you will, or be more broad about what retail we're going to have. So sometimes if you go to a lot of places, I look at I have a daughter who lives in Stanford, for example, and that's, you know, upper crust. But at the same time, you know, they have a lot of things that are within the neighborhoods and the communities. They've done that. They've taken condo style of facilities with entertainment area in the surrounding area. Restaurants have just grown around them, obviously at a different economic scale. So I don't want to preclude that this might be the first of many. If we don't get more apartment complexes, then there won't be anything downtown. So 162 is not going to be able to maintain that. We need more. So this might be a way to say if we something attractive, even more attractive than expected, others might be more competitive about looking at development in the downtown area further. That's just my, I want to keep that boiling up a little bit. I like the ideas.
Alderman Pabon?
I got a question. Now, are you expecting to get state funding? And what would happen if you don't get it?
We'll try again. We think that this is a building that, or a project that the state's very interested in. This is the right kind of project for the state to fund.
So if you don't get it, you can try again.
Well, I think what I'm trying to say is that we believe that it's a project that the state will fund, and we wouldn't really pursue it if we didn't think that was the case. I don't want to put a percentage on it, but very high percentage that it will get funded.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Alderman Sanders.
Yeah, just a couple more small comments here, kind of to Alderman Carlozzi's concerns with some of the other landlords and things downtown. I think competition breeds success, and I think that putting in a new facility like this, it's going to be, I saw the pictures of the interior, looks nice, it's fresh, you got nice retail downstairs. It's going to make our downtown property owners bring their A game. It's going to minimize the amount of housing complaints, because those landlords are going to have to step it up, or they're not going to fill their properties because we have such other beautiful places to go. So I think this is a very, very positive thing. And again, I'm really excited about it. And if you can get that rooftop garden in there, go for it.
But something.
We have a cannabis farm.
Do we have any further discussion? Alderman Naples?
Just one thing through you. I presume that you're not starting in spring because you need the extra time to raise funds. Is that it? It looks like a lot of design is already done.
Well, the design isn't completely done, but it will be done soon. It is about the funding and then the closing of the project. It takes a long time.
Okay.
And believe me, if we could do it faster, we would.
Alderman Carlozzi.
One last quick question.
Yep.
If the funding goes as you foresee, when does the shovel go in the ground?
As I said, it should be about a year from today.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion on the floor? Any further discussion? Third and final time? Any further discussion? Just so everyone is aware, the motion on the floor is to refer this back to council with a favorable recommendation. And we will have a vote on resolution 335-60-1. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you
Thank
very
you.
Much. Thank you. Do we have any other? Yes, Alderman Naples.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move to take resolution number 33501 off the table.
Do I have a second?
A second.
Motion made by Alderman Naples to take resolution 33501, proposed amendment of code of ordinances regarding definition of family, off the table, seconded by Alderman Salerno. You have the floor, Alderman Naples.
Yes, thank you. This was considered by the committee several months ago now.
Hold on.
We didn't vote on the motion to remove.
Okay, we have to vote on that. Okay.
Oh, you're right. I was just going to explain what the thing was about.
No, there's a motion made and second. It's on these.
Correct, yeah. Yep.
Then you start explaining if it's removed.
Yep. Sorry about that, Alderman Carlozzi.
Thank you.
Seconded by Alderman Salerno. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed? The floor is yours, Alderman Naples.
Thank you for the correction.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
If we could just have a moment. I'm sorry, Alderman. These folks have a long way to travel. We just need to get the thumb drive out of the computer.
Oh, yes.
Again, my apologies, Alderman Naples.
So, and by the way, you're from New York?
Yes.
Whereabouts? It's a new condo right by the train station in an old industrial site.
Oh, okay. Oh, very cool.
It's built like maybe 10 years.
Okay.
So you guys are close.
Yeah, very
nice. Roberto's from Massachusetts?
Yes. Yes, just outside of Boston.
Oof. 2 hours, 1 way, 2 hours. 684 has no traffic right now.
684.
Thank you.
Have a good one. Thank you again.
You might have, if you're driving, you might have trouble in Waterbury, but.
You want to shut that down?
I'll avoid it.
Thank you.
Alderman Naples, the floor is yours.
Thank you. As most of us know, this was brought before the committee before. At that time, it was tabled because it needed more discussion about what the definition of family should be. At the time, we were trying to reconcile the differences in wording between the zoning regulations and the city ordinances, and we're still trying to do that. However, in discussion with several of you and recognizing the modern social environment, three apparently isn't going to be enough to cover several situations. I thought it was difficult, but it's fairly easy to come up with family situations where you could have four unrelated people and they're still in a family. We can't have more than that because it comes up against the rooming house rules, which are hard and fast and have a whole separate set of regulations, so we don't want to get into that. And it looks like we'll be taking up the rooming house is in the same situation where the zoning regs has one definition and the city ordinance has another at the next meeting. It looks like we're just focusing on four for a maximum number of unrelated people and not just so-called families or non-traditional families, but off-campus housing and citywide unrelated housing. So there's a misconception out there that we're targeting off-campus housing. It's in the mix, but we're not limiting it to that. So I'm hoping that we could use the revised wording that you have in front of you, which the one that got tabled didn't have quite the wording of this. So I would propose that we take it and refer it to the next committee meeting for discussion with proper noticing, even though we don't, according to the Corporation Council, we don't have to do that. I think that's a smart move, since there is this interest with at least two articles in the paper in the last couple of weeks related.
Okay. Noticed with a public hearing, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think you need to do a motion to amend the one that's been taken off the table.
Right. I was going to say, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. You need to make a motion to amend, and then...
I'm sorry. I moved to amend to the... amend the motion, the resolution that came off the table to the revised wording that you have in front of you, which basically says the paragraph that is being changed says when four or fewer individuals not related by blood or by marriage do live and cook together on the premises as a single housekeeping unit, such individuals not exceeding four may be considered a family. It works out to basically just changing two words in what the existing regs ordinance says, which is five parent, close parent, five. So now we're doing four and four. The rest of the wording is identical.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Alderman Sanders. Now that is a motion to amend. Alderman Carlosi?
Mr. Chairman, just to be crystal clear, I only see two changes. Basically, the word four and the number four inserted in the very beginning and repeated again at the very end. Looks like the language word by word is, other than that, exactly the same. Alderman Naples, is that correct?
Yes. Now, what had been cranked in there was
right. And that's
sentence
been deleted.
About the three to match it to
right.
the. So,
but in there, the language had changed as well. This time, yeah. You're using the exact language that there was, simply changing the word five to four and the number five
right.
to the number four.
And then at some point we're going to have to take up changing the zoning regs to match this definition.
There are no other changes at all in this particular.
No, that's correct. Yes, okay. That's correct.
Point of clarification, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Alderman.
For request, are we saying that we're going to take the amendment provision tonight, or we are going to put it back on for further discussion?
We're saying we're referring it to the committee for further discussion with a public hearing.
Yeah, cool. That's because my comment is obviously I think we talked about this privately as well
right.
as in general that I think what it needs is to make sure that when we have the conversation and discussion. Not to diminish it, I think we all understand yeah. Why we're doing this, or a lot of what we're doing it, but we want to make it clear so it doesn't get any kinds of backlash that's yeah. negative if once we pass that particular.
And if we can do
change.
It right, it will
right.
also consider the rooming house definition.
Okay.
But Mr. Chairman,
discrepancy.
Just to make sure that I'm clear, if we have to vote on the amendment,
right.
we have to vote
the amendment
and
first.
And then make another motion to refer it back
that
to committee.
That's correct.
Okay. That's so we can't just leave it at this and now just say, okay, we're going
right.
to refer
and
it
that
back.
Was the clarification. That's
thank
what
you.
We were that's that was the next
we're only
step.
Talking about voting on the amendment now.
Yep.
Cool. Speaking to the amendment, do we have any further discussion on the amendment? Do we have any further discussion? Seeing none.
I'm sorry. Just one final question, if I may, Mr.
Yes.
Chairman. And so changing it from five to four seems very minor. what are we, why are we changing it from 5 to 4 so I'm crystal clear in my mind? Does 5 create a rooming house situation?
There's a conflict with the rooming house regulations if it's 5.
Okay.
So it's, for some people it's not minor because I'm already getting an email saying the zoning regs say 3 and now you're going to 4. So
okay.
Some it could be considered minor, but I think it's deserves a fair hearing.
Yep,
that'll be
it
the
does.
Next discussion.
Okay.
On that note, one quick question. So we're actually boosting the number up from what it was from 3 to 4.
No.
Yeah, technically we are because there is a city ordinance that says if there are two ordinances that conflict, the one with the higher standards for public safety and others shall prevail. So we could conceivably the building services uses that a lot when there's a conflict. They enforce the one that's a higher standard. In this case, the higher standard would be 3.
So we are gonna increase that to 4, and that's gonna avoid future conflicts in those. So is that what you're saying? It's gonna resolve any conflicts in the future.
Hopefully, as far as a reasonable number that you can set it at. When I discussed it with Attorney Skelly, he said there was court precedent for coming up with a reasonable number. And actually, 3 was a reasonable number. We have reason to do 4.
And just one more, I guess, really kind of a point of information here. I mean, I think this all originated with CCSU, and then you stumbled upon this, and we're basically doing this now just to clarify this ordinance and put it in line to reduce conflicts in the future is really the premise of doing what we're trying to do here.
One of the factors for doing it was the potential conflict with the rooming house regulations if you allowed a family to be defined as 5 unrelated. People might say that these students are a family.
Right. No, I understand that. I'm just saying the main premise now is what we stumbled upon is to just kind of get it in line.
Put them all.
Could it help with the CCSU situation? Yes. That's not really our main goal.
When we get done, if it's done right, all of them will be saying the same thing in both the zoning regs and the city ordinances, and they'll all be 4.
Right. I'm just looking for a justification and answer when, you know, if it does get heated. I think it makes sense to say that we're just aligning things and this is what we stumbled upon.
We didn't stumble upon it, but this is what we gravitated to based on the wording. And,
well,
and if
you
anybody
worked very
complains
hard
about
information,
going from 3 to 4, for off-campus housing, I mean, we had one last week that had 8 in it on Stanley Street. And there are several that have 6 and 7. So all the neighbors that complain about it, you know, we are going from 3 to 4.
Okay.
But we're going to enforce 4.
Right.
And we already are because of the rooming house rules.
Right. Thank you.
Do we have any further discussion on the amendment? Any further discussion on the amendment? Therefore, we will vote on the amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? Okay. Now we will also
take the revised amendment be added to the agenda of the next planning, zoning, and housing meeting with public participation.
Second.
Seconded by Alderman Sanders. Motion made by Alderman Naples. Do we have to have any further discussion on this one? No.
I think you have to offer discussion.
Did it.
Any further discussion? Third and final time. Any further discussion?
You only need it once. When did this happen?
I like to do it 3 times.
Mr. Chairman, I suggest that you table it now, but it will be scheduled for the public hearing.
Then we'd have to vote to take it off the table again. If we refer it to the committee, it'll be on the next agenda.
You're referring it to your own committee?
Yes, the next committee meeting.
Well, usually you would table it and then you'd bring it up again.
Then how can they do public participation?
Because you made a substantive change.
You made a substantive change.
Which requires it. I'll make a motion to table.
Second.
Motion made. My question is, if you publish the agenda...
It will be published just like this agenda was, that it's on the table.
But you're having a meeting.
So we're going to have to vote to take it off the table next time.
Correct.
But it'll be the amended one.
All right. That's right.
You don't have to have an agenda per se, because it's always there with it being off the table.
That's what it takes.
It's a dilatory.
Plus, there will be a separate public hearing section, which is going to list it. So that will be taken care of.
Oh, okay. So there will be a legal notice.
We don't customarily list things on the table.
There will be a legal notice.
Okay. So motion to table was made by Alderman Carlozzi, seconded by Alderman Salerno.
No discussion.
There is no discussion.
We already had too much discussion.
Is there any discussion?
Procedural.
No, there is no discussion.
Right.
Wow.
Seeing no other items on the agenda.
No, you got to take the vote.
Yes.
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 Sorry. Yeah. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes.
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
Any discussion?
Parliamentary procedure 101.
Adjournment at 8:11 p.m.
Is there any discussion?
No.